let's get practical and seek to get better, seek to do better, seek to be thorough, be pay attention to detail, and would all be better for it. I think an enemy of thoroughness or an enemy of excellence is multitasking, like thinking that you can multitask at the same time. Like, it's terrible. We, as humans, we sometimes overestimate and underestimate our abilities. And this can be really, really, the rewards are really negative. Like, it's bad. So please, as much as possible, avoid focusing too much or paying too much attention on too many things. There is only a finite amount of attention we can give to the things we're doing. So it's a good thing if that focus is directed at one thing at a time. So I'd recommend avoiding multitasking as much as possible. It is an enemy of seeking excellence and being thorough. Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and wherever you're listening to us from. This is the Creatives Chronicles, the podcast for designers and developers. Here on the show, we share experiences, learnings and feelings. We keep it real. We explore topics and conversations to help you become a well-rounded professional. My name is Bright Emeka, and as always, I'm joined by the man, the myth, and the legend, Bosuke Chikunda. Good morning, Ross.
Yeah, good morning, and welcome to the audience. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for tuning into today's show. Before we get into today's episode, we'd like to start a new episode. Drum roll, please. Where's my drum? Okay, this segment is called Cool Tip or Cool Idea of the Week. And we'll share a cool idea or two or a suggestion or something that has been helpful or that is going to be helpful. And now for the Cool Tip of the Week, my cool tip for today is basically a hack on books and getting bite-sized actionable takeaways and actionable nuggets from books. Usually, before diving deep into any book, what I first do is I look for TED Talks or speeches or summaries that the author has given about that particular book. And usually the author is forced to compress the core ideas into bite-sized actionable nuggets. Like, the author has to condense the core thoughts for that book and give it in a talk. So this helps me decide, it serves two purposes. One, it helps me decide whether I want to actually read that book. And two, it just gives you a basic summary and, of the book. So there you have it.
I didn't catch that the first time.
Okay. Like, my cool tip for today is a hack for books and reading books and getting actionable takeaways from books. Before diving into any book, I would first search for TED Talks or speeches that the author of that book has given. Usually, the author is forced to condense the core ideas of a book into bite-sized information when they are giving TED Talks or speeches, right? This hack does two things for me. Number one, it helps me decide whether I want to read the book or not. And then, secondly, it helps me get the core message, like, really fast and cool. Yeah.
I usually check talks at Google because sometimes, especially you see their talks and it's long enough where you can get a good sense of what the person is talking about. And some other interviews they do for their book promotions. Yeah. I also do that too, but I didn't have it formalized down like that. Okay, so then mine is related around goal settings. People always set goals, and January is going to be a time for people. This the end of the year now is a time for goal review. People are going to do a lot of reviews, and as is the case, many people who have fallen short of their New Year resolution they set at the beginning of the year. The cycle will continue next January. So basically, my tip for this week is set systems, not goals. For example, I usually try to read at least 20 books in a year, at least. So before, I used to set a goal at the beginning of the year. I will read 20 books this year. But these days, or since last year, I stopped that and started setting systems. I will read at least 20 pages of a book a day. And doing that for this year, I have read about 50 books, and I'm currently on 2 more. So reading a set number of pages per day, for me it's 20, for some people it could be 10 or 5. That is a better system than a goal. You see, that's an inverse way of adopting the advice to break your tasks down into little bite-sized chunks. And also, for exercise, instead of saying, I want to maybe do whatever it is, you could just say, I will do maybe 10 or 5 push-ups every day or 3 times a day. So set systems, not goals, and that's how you build habits too.
Awesome. This is really, really incredible. Thank you for sharing with us. Set systems, not just goals. The systems would help you achieve those goals. Awesome. Thank you for sharing with us. For today's episode, we'll be focusing on being thorough and the pursuit of excellence. I'd like to start by quoting Will Durant. He said, "We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is then not an act, but a habit." Most people have attributed this to Aristotle, but actually it was Will Durant that said this. How we approach what we do rubs off on various aspects of our life. Like the way we do one thing translates most of the times to how we do almost everything. Like if we pay attention, we would notice patterns and tendencies in the way we handle or approach our task and our activities. I think it's the Bible, where it's in the Bible that Jesus said, "He who is faithful in little is also faithful in much." And I've seen this to be true in many aspects of my life and work. So I think it's really important we give attention to how we approach our work and how we approach what we do. You don't want to... I think there's even an issue. I think we should even address this first. Like, most of the times we hold people to higher standards than we hold ourselves. Boss, why do you think this is? Like, it's naturally, it's easier for us to expect excellence and thoroughness from others than we expect from ourselves.
Okay. Firstly, another, we'll call it a tip, if you like. Will Durant's book, Lessons of History, is a book I would highly recommend to anyone. It's kind of like a look at history from basically from Adam up to the present time, and it's there are a lot of nuggets. And if you're not going to look at history the same way, you're not going to look at the present the same way, and it's going to also help you to navigate the present and the future better, because basically history basically repeats in the large. Okay, so why people can excuse their own shortcomings and their own shortcomings? Basically, context. So, for example, for your own shortcomings or for everybody's shortcomings, you usually have reasons and you understand your reasons, right? Because it's you, right? But you don't have the reasons. You don't have the insights as to the cause and the circumstance surrounding other people's shortcomings. So you don't tend to give them as much leeway. It's basically the absence of context. That's why we are easier on ourselves and harder on others for the same shortcoming. There's context for yourself. Let's say you're supposed to exercise every day and you don't do that and you end up getting fat. You have your reasons, or you know what, even if whether the reasons are flimsy or not, you know the reasons why what happened and what didn't happen. But for the other person, you just see them as lazy. You don't know, you don't have a good insight or a good view into the reasons. And without that context, you tend to just interpret the shortcomings however you want or at face value.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. Being thorough and pursuing excellence in whatever we do is really, really important. But there is a difference between being thorough and being a perfectionist. Like, perfectionism is when someone is striving to be flawless. Like, this is not the case for thoroughness. Like, being thorough is paying attention to detail. Let's talk about perfectionism and being thorough. Like, they are different, really different. They're not the same.
Yes, perfectionism, being a perfectionist is to the extreme, to the point of being a flaw rather than a good attribute. So it's unrealistic because there's a limit to how good you can go. So you're setting yourself for constant disappointment if you're a perfectionist. And most times too, it's ill-advised because the world is too complex, and there are so many things that are outside your control that will mitigate against you achieving a perfect result all the time. Two, sometimes the time and effort it will take you to get that perfect result you're looking for is unrealistic relative to the results that is going to be achieved from the time and effort you're going to put into the task or whatever it is you're seeking to be perfect at. So, like it is said, the perfect is the enemy of the good, and you should go to war with the soldiers you have, not the soldiers you wish you had. So, basically, seeking perfection, number one, the payoffs are not always going to be they're not always going to be commensurate to your efforts, and it's a character flaw. So, it's not something advisable, and it's not something practical, and we should be dealing in the practical, so that's what's achievable.
Yeah, awesome. Very true. Perfectionism is not it's not practical. So let's get practical and seek to get better, seek to do better, seek to be thorough, pay attention to detail, and would all be better for it. I think an enemy of thoroughness or an enemy of excellence is multitasking, like thinking that you can multitask at the same time. Like, it's terrible. We, as humans, we sometimes overestimate and underestimate our abilities. And this can be really, really, the rewards are really negative. Like, it's bad. So please, as much as possible, avoid focusing too much or paying too much attention on too many things. There is only a finite amount of attention we can give to the things we're doing. So it's a good thing if that focus is directed at one thing at a time. So I'd recommend avoiding multitasking as much as possible. It is an enemy of seeking excellence and being thorough.
Yeah. Also, too, another, would I say, flaw or trait that mitigates against being thorough is not caring enough about something, and also customs. So basically, in Nigeria, one sentence that demonstrates these bad habits, these bad traits, is manage them like that, or make me manage them. That's what I say, one of the greatest enemies of being thorough editing, when you don't care enough. So you tend to do the least you can get away with. And that's also what customs and traditions also help to shield. They serve as an alibi for people who just want to do the least required, to get out of trouble. They can hide under customs that, okay, this is the way it is done. Even if you know that, okay, that's less than what you could do, and that's less than what you can do or what you should do. But because that's the minimum acceptable, most times people will try to put in the minimum amount of effort they can legally get away with. So not caring enough. It's also mediocrity from another point of view, basically.
Yeah, so it's important we care about what we do. That would help us be thorough. That would help us be thorough about what we're doing. I think there's a quote, it's by...
Okay, not just feeling the emotion, because also another thing too, people like is to feel the right emotion. Like that's what's called woo today. You're feeling the right emotion, but you're not lifting up the finger to do anything. So care in the sense that not just having the intention to want to do something, but actually taking steps to do it. The intention without the commensurate action is useless.
There's a quote by Dieter Rams, and he said that good design is thorough down to the last detail. And he went on to say that nothing must be arbitrary in our design or left to chance. Care and accuracy in the design process, it shows that we respect the user of that project or the product we are doing. So it's important we care about what we do also. But there's something I want us to talk about before we go on. Some of the tasks we do as creatives and technologists, right? It can feel routine-like, it can feel monotonous and just sometimes plain boring. How can you advise we focus on how can we get through this routine-like task? Care will play a little role, but what else could we do?
In any cases, you can't get away from it, so you should embrace what's boring. Like, there's a movie where, is it The Hitman's Bodyguard? Where the guy that plays Deadpool, I think he was one of the leading protagonists along with Samuel L. Jackson. And there's one thing he says in the movie, boring is good. And most times that's true. Boring is good. As in, and when things are uneventful, it's safe and good, because what are eventful activities, most times they can be bad as well as they can be good. So what I'm trying to say is you shouldn't, I think in this generation, we tend to focus too much on feelings, how something makes me feel. You're not always going to, the attraction of an activity or of a habit shouldn't be primarily and solely based on how it will make you feel. There are a lot of things that are good for you that won't make you feel all right, like medicine. But guess what? If you don't take a medicine because you don't feel good about taking the medicine, you run the risk of dying. And in that, when you die, you're not going to feel anything at all, good or bad. So the focus, because I that's basically my own interpretation of the events around me. I think the focus on feelings or wanting to feel good, it's bad. And you can look at the effects around us, because pursuit of pleasure solely for the sake of pleasure, that is hedonism. And hedonism is not a good practice. It's basically self-destructive. So having said that, then of course, sometimes too, I'm not also saying that you should live a monastic life because feelings and pleasure are totally bad. I'm not saying that. So, but the focus or the importance placed on good feeling, and it shouldn't be the overarching and driving goal behind whatever it is we do. So you should accept that some part or a good part of your routine is going to be boring. Because basically what is boring? Routine is basically something you do and you do repeatedly the same. And excitement is a deviation from the norm. You get excited about new things, new experiences. So if you have a routine, it basically means that you're not going to be experiencing anything new. So the possibility for excitement is very low or non-existent, low to non-existent. But of course, there's some things you could do, and which is why we talked about earlier, we talked about caring, because when you care about something, doing it is basically fulfillment. So what we should be looking for is fulfillment, not pleasure. Because fulfillment, even if the actions are not exciting or the routine is not exciting, but you get satisfaction from doing them. And at the end of the day, that's what is important. A fulfillment factor in a task or the habit. So I think we should stop seeking to optimize for excitement and optimize more for fulfillment. And you can get fulfillment from doing things that are seemingly boring.
Yeah, awesome. This reminds me of lead measures and lag measures, Cal Newport, Deep Work. Where some of the times the lead measures that would bring for the results we want are sometimes monotonous and routine-like, but because we don't measure it, we cannot accurately say this is what led to this or this is when this change happened. But if we can find a way to just keep track of those monotonous and boring tasks, we can get fulfillment in when we see the streak of what we have been doing and achieving, right? So I think also keeping track of those boring or understanding that those boring details will ultimately lead to the fulfilling outcome you want, it will help you get through those routine-like tasks.
I know about Tony Hall, but I haven't read that. But I think that's the same idea that James Clear expressed in a blog post about habits. He called it a "don't break the chain." So that's the blog post that the Catena came out from. So keep tracking a chain of a streak of your habits. So also too on the aspect of boring routines. Well, where some form of pleasure or some form of excitement might be important. It's just as a hook to get you started. Habits are by definition boring, or most habits are by definition boring. If you look at your day, there are many things you do reflexively or habitually that you don't think about, and they're not all exciting. Habits are not exciting by definition, but to form the habits, that's where you need enough interest to carry out the action long enough for it to become habitual. And then one of the ways that has been suggested to do so is having a hook. So what's a hook? A hook is or a trigger. If you call it a hook, you call it a trigger. So for example, let's say I need to exercise, then I now tell myself I'm going to be exercising before I brush my teeth. That's a hook. So now I don't need to specially remember to exercise. I just need to know that before I brush my teeth, or after I brush my teeth, or after I do whatever it is you do habitually. So you link it up to a habit you already have, or an activity you already have ongoing. And if I exercise long enough after or before brushing my teeth, then even when the hook has been taken away, the habit of exercising can still continue. I visualize it like starting up a diesel engine, or this diesel engine you have to crank with the hand. You see that when you've turned it long enough, the engine takes off. Even when you stop turning, you only need to turn it long enough for the engine to kick to life. And when it has come to life, you can stop turning, and the engine will take it up from there. So that's what hooks help us do. And that is the aspects of habit forming. The beginning stages of habit forming is where some excitement or some creativity can help.
Yeah, awesome. Habit stacking, that is incredibly important and cool. Let's just share more tips and strategies for striving for excellence and becoming thorough. One of the ones I would want to point out is getting organized, and going back to what you said earlier, creating systems, like it is extremely important. So get organized, create a system for staying thorough, for paying attention to detail. What would be like your own flight checklist? Like how understand that what you're doing is important. Place priority on the work you're doing and give yourself a checklist of, okay, this is what I should check, this is what I should check before I ship what I'm doing. Plan your day before you dive in, get organized, set systems, and also take notes. Like as much as possible, don't overload your brain or your cognitive abilities. There's only so much you can focus on. So if you can find systems to help you do things, you don't have to necessarily remember every single thing. So creating a system around what you do, around how you want to maintain or strive for excellence, would be incredibly helpful.
Yeah, and two things in addition. One is knowledge. I think this Solomon, so those in the Bible that says, get wisdom, and all I get is get understanding or get knowledge. So basically, you can be excellent at something you are ignorant about. So get knowledge, learn the fundamentals of things. For example, as in these days, our educational system was, if you study the history of this type of educational system we practice, it has its uses, although it's not optimized for personal excellence. It's just optimized for getting people who can serve as, who can work in the system. So that's why it's heavily specialized. But you should not just be specialized in one thing, but you should know a lot about a lot of things. You should be a generalist in some way, even if you have your special field. And knowing a lot of things, the fact that you read biology in school does not mean you shouldn't know something about physics and how the world works. Because knowledge is not as specialized and as straitjacketed as our educational system would lead us to believe. Yes, but in biology too, the physics knowledge also bleeds into the biology, and the biology bleeds into the physics, and every other field of knowledge, they're bleeding into each other, which is why in the medieval and the Renaissance times, people were more generalists, like Michelangelo was, or Da Vinci was a painter, was an anatomist, a doctor, a this, a that, and a that. And that was the norm then. People were generalists. No, you might have a special field, or a favorite field, but know a bit about other things, and you understand the world better that way. So get knowledge and get the fundamental. You don't need to know, as a biologist, you don't need to know about string theory and stuff, but the basic laws of physics, the Newton's three laws of motion, it applies in a whole lot of sense. It doesn't only apply to physical objects, or it doesn't only apply in the physics classroom. It applies to everything. Inertia, reactions and reactions, those are universal laws. And every field has all these basic laws, these foundational laws. And on the basics and the foundation is where you need to build complex knowledge structures. And so they're very helpful. Learn a little about everything, or about many things. And of course, in this, there's a popular saying that is used to denigrate generalism: jack of all trades, master of none. And also that's also a case in point as to why you should know a little about a lot, because that saying, the original saying, is actually a praise of generalism over specialization. But what people end up repeating today, the conventional wisdom, is a shortened form of that saying. Jack of all trades, master of none. If you stop there, you think that, okay, it's a criticism of generalism. But what of the next line? The complete line of that saying is, but oftentimes better than the master of one. So the saying taken in full is actually praising generalism over specialization. But that's just a fun trivia. Then secondly, carry out postmortems, as in you should always elicit feedback. Carry out postmortem, carry out what, like in school, we call it continuous assessment. Continuously assess your actions and decisions. I think in the Psalm, somewhere in the Psalm, it's teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Teaching us to number our days, that's basically carrying out an audit, or carrying out a postmortem, or assessing our actions. So the only way you get better, you get better at decision making, is by analyzing your past decisions. Like in chess, players usually, how do they get better? They analyze their past games to improve on their present and future games. In school too, the main purpose of exams is not just necessarily to pass and fail people, but to provide a form of assessment, a checklist as to what areas that you've learned and what's the areas of knowledge you're still lacking in. And outside school too, the exams and assessments are not just useful within the school environment. Outside school, we are supposed to be assessing our days, assessing our actions, assessing our work. Carry out postmortems on different things we do. Okay, this is what I did this way. How could I do it better? Is it good enough? Can I improve? Where can I improve? So those two things, knowing, having knowledge, and also continuously assessing your decisions and actions, are two general life tips, I would say, that can also be helpful to technical people.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, boss. In closing, I'd like to state that the pursuit for excellence and thoroughness is a never-ending journey. Like, there is no vanishing point. If there's a vanishing point, it becomes perfectionism. So there is no vanishing point. There is always more we can become. We can always do better. So, in our work, in our relationships, in whatever we are doing, as much as possible, always strive to do better and strive to become better, right? And we'd all be better for it.
Yeah, for closing words, it's basically, I repeat something I said earlier, an author that Brian brought up, Will Durant. So I will recommend people read The Lessons of History. Because I think one of the points he made in that book is that in the opening chapters of the book, he said why the study of history was important. It's because you don't have enough time to make every mistake and learn every lesson that has already been learned. That's why the study of history is important. And that's one of the books I try to reread every year. It's that interesting and it's that impactful. There are very few books that I reread, so I just read only once and then focus on my notes. But Lessons of History is among the books I try to reread every year. It's a very good book and I would highly recommend it.
Awesome. Thanks, boss. I would definitely get that book and start reading it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Please do remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Visit thecreativeschoolnewcos.com/subscribe and select your podcast player of choice. Click on the subscribe button and please also leave us reviews on iTunes. This helps other creatives discover our show. You can tell us what stood out for you in today's episode. Tell us how you are also striving for excellence and how you are being thorough in your work. Reach out to us via DMs. It's at BrightCMeka on Twitter. It's at UKChalks on Twitter. And you can also send us an email, thecreativeschoolnewcos@gmail.com. If you found this episode valuable, please do share with a friend, share with a loved one, and retweet us on Twitter, please. Thank you so, so much for your time today. Remember to always be creating. Go out today and create awesomeness. We will see you next week. Have an amazing day. And bye for now.